say, Cookie Monster, what letter is that that goes up, down, up, down?
That the letter M, Harry. And the letter M reminds me of a lot of wonderful things to eat.
Let's think of some.
Okay.
Michelle. Murphy.
Ready to munch.
Michael.
Marcelli.
Monster want lunch.
Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Michelle Murphy.
I love to dance. I love to freak a fucking little leak, you know? But like, not if you tell me to. The minute you're like, dance, I'm like, no. And if you say, feel free, I'm like, I don't feel free if you tell me to feel free, okay?
That and more. But first, I want to give a quick shout out to Stacey McHugh, who joined our Patreon at the Tie the Shoes to Your Balls level. That gets her all kind of Patreon perks, including a new check-in from me about my epic summer, the 3 weeks that I spent at a hypnosis intensive, super-duper profound experience, and this incredibly unusual move I'm making. So Stacey, being a Patreon member, has access to that check-in, and you could too if you join us there at patreon.com/risk. Those contributions are what keeps the show going.
So, monsters who are so hungry, we'll just eat this big letter M. We'll be right back.
Folks, when my father was diagnosed with cancer in 2005, the prognosis at that time was that he might have about a year to live. Well, he beat that cancer, and we had 15 more wonderful, joyous years with my father. Years he got to spend with his grandchildren while they were growing up. We were so grateful for the support that we got from the medical community and all of that. Well, listen, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does such invaluable work. Blood cancer makes up 40% of pediatric and young adult cancers, including leukemia and lymphoma. And 80% of these survivors have lifelong side effects from their treatment. Young adults with blood cancer need support made just for them to help them live better, live longer. LLS, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, offers free support, resources, and connection to peer survivors. If you or someone you know has been diagnosed with blood cancer, contact LLS online at lls.org/support-resources or by calling 800-955-4572 today. Now here's the show. Folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is the one and only Crash Test Dummies. Behind me now with their aberration, song, that has a fan base consisting of, our editor, John LaSala. I'll tell you, when The State, my sketch comedy group, arrived at Compass Point Studios in the Bahamas to record our comedy album in 1996, we were so excited to be where the Rolling Stones, AC/DC, Grace Jones, Talking Heads, the B-52s, David Bowie, Diana Ross, Sade, Bjork, and James Brown had recorded before us. But it's such a shame that our editor, John LaSala, wasn't a member of The State, because the band we found exiting the studios precisely as we were entering was none other than the creators of the aberration, I mean, song. John would have been creaming his jeans. In fact, even while he's just listening to this edit of this hosting segment right now, I am assuming the interior of John's jeans is as thick with custard as a Shake Shack soft serve churn. I'm just teasing. Of course, we all have a certain fondness for which is why we're calling this week's episode that, and the fact that it features stories by Michelle Murphy and Michael Marceline. So it's our first ever episode named after the storyteller's initials. Let's start with the one Michelle Murphy told at the Risk Live Show in LA in April of this year. It's a story we call Sex Cult Weekend.
I have a will-they-or-won't-they relationship with cults. We're kind of courting each other. You know, I grew up Catholic, so I have immediate tension with figures of authority, right? Happy recovery, unless you're still in it. Good luck. I will be in a room with someone who's like, I have a connection to a higher power, and you should do what I say. Immediately, I'm fighting that person, okay? Physically or psychically, it doesn't matter. I'm like, we're fucking tangoing. However, I also am a seeker, and I'm stupid, and I'm into like nudity and psychedelics and community. So the Venn diagram for me and cults, like, it's uncomfortably close. So what happens is I find myself being like, oh, like, groovy message and good times. And I'm like in something and I'm vibing. And then I'm like, oh shit, this is a cult. Oh my God. Okay, we gotta go. And then I like try to grab as many people as I can. And I try to get out. And then I'm like fighting the cult leader on the way out. I'm like, don't sue me. I have no money. Let's go. And so that's kind of how it goes for me. And my story takes place in San Francisco, which is just a hotbed of cults. You know, Jim Jones was doing all his stuff there. They have that divine pleasure cult called Cosmic Coming or something, where you like pay the leaders so that you can finger bang each other when you could just do it for free, right? Like, all ideas are welcome in the Bay if you're a cult. But I wasn't thinking about cults this weekend, okay? Because I was going on a work trip, right? I worked for a suicide prevention line at the time. Yeah. And the CEO was like, I'm going to send you and another coworker to this mental health summit up north to present our data, have a mental health summit of a weekend. Great. So we didn't know anything about the summit except that it was being led by a woman in her 20s, maybe 30s, hard to say. And she worked at YouTube. And that's those are the only credentials we heard. And we were like, that sounds legit. Let's go. So we got picked up in the Castro neighborhood by a friend of the woman leading the summit. So my coworker Robbie and I get in. We meet this guy, Joe, and then we take off. And we're driving through the beautiful redwood forest. And we arrive to this gorgeous place called The Place. Capital T, capital P, just The Place. And I was like, that's a little on the nose, yet also whimsical. So good for you guys. And the minute we arrive, we feel like royalty. People come to the car and they're like taking our names down. They're handing us rose petal infused water. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Where am I? They take me to a cabin called the Hummingbird Cabin. And you guys, the sheets are so crisp and clean. And somebody has like collected wildflowers and lavender and placed it gingerly atop my pillow. And I work in mental health, okay? So this is so nice. And I've also just gone through a terrible breakup in San Francisco, a mold infestation with a slumlord. So I'm like, I am living this weekend. Like, this I don't understand what's happening, but I don't need to understand what's happening, okay? And it's strange right off the bat. They're like, explore the grounds, pet the goats, walk the meditation circle, drink the mocktails made from our mulberry bush puree. And I'm like, okay, what the fuck? there's no money in mental health, right? Like, we notoriously are a field that can't afford nice things. So what's happening? But again, don't ask any questions. Just chill, bitch. Just like fucking chill, right? So we gather on the first night, and it's a real menagerie of characters who are at this mental health summit. There's a professor from Berkeley and his TAs. There's people from the American with Disability Association. That's cool. And there are also some townies from the town over who have just like wandered in, and the mental health summit was like, yes, we'll take your money for sure. So we're all there. It's a collection of people. Everyone's white. Big surprise. And this one woman named Junebug, I'll let you interpret whatever you want from that, is there, and I can't really tell what she does. And she's wearing Tevas and like a fake fur fringe coat. I'm embarrassed to admit that I was very drawn to her for that reason. And we start talking, and she's like, I really like your vibe, you know, and she's an older woman, and she's like, in 6 months on the East Coast, I'm leading a women's workshop. I would love you to come. And I was like, oh, cool. Okay, and like, what's it like? And she was like, it's a workshop for women. And I was like, right, and yeah, and I am a woman, and and what will happen to me there? And she was like, it's a women's workshop. And I was like, okay, it's going to be like that. All right, Junebug, I get it. So that's my first red flag, right? If you can't answer a question and it's just a vague experience, you should be worried. And I go and I look up the event in my cabin later, and it's like $8,000 a day to be a woman or something. And so I'm like, all right, that's another red flag. But like, again, we're chilling, right? And as I'm collecting these red flags from the other people there, I'm realizing nobody hosting the mental health summit has any experience in mental health or knows what they're doing. Like, one of our activities starts with a woman describing a suicide that she encountered. And I won't get into the graphic details and tell you all about it, because it'd be so irresponsible to just get into the graphic details and tell you all about it the way that she did. And we're not technically at a comedy show, so I don't want you to kill yourself after this, right? So I'm like, that's really irresponsible, and we're feeling really loose and flexible with the mental health stuff. Meanwhile, the place itself is getting even wackier. I go to one of the staff members, and I'm like, this is a gorgeous set of property, this farm. It's amazing. So is that how you guys make money? You rent it out for events? And he was like, oh, no, not events, for gathering. And I was like, oh, I'm like trying to beautiful mind it. I'm like, events and gathering, synonymous, okay, you know. And then I'm like, oh, I get it. He's about it. Like, this guy is with it. He can dig it. It's gathering. It's without charging. He's not corporate. So I was like, that's really cool that you just lend this space out to nonprofits with missions that you really relate to. That's amazing. And you do it for free and like for sliding scale. And he was like, what's sliding scale? And I was like, what? You go first. What to you is gathering? You know, like you, 1, 2, 3, let's both say our thing, right? So I'm the flags are getting magenta now. Red is the color, right? And I'm like, but again, you don't need to be that girl. You don't need to be a little Irish Catholic cunt who's like, fuck you, cult. Like, you work hard. Your life sucks. Just like, take a breather. Have the lavender, you know? And then I see on the itinerary that we're supposed to meet in a field for Junebug leading a workshop ceremony. Very vague, workshop ceremony. And I'm like, fuck, it's popping off. So I go to this field, and there are blankets, and we're surrounded by all these flowers, and she's smiling at all of us and welcoming us to the space, right? And then leader of the mental health summit is like, this is Junebug's activity. The only reason we're at the place is because of Junebug. She introduced us to this property. It's the thing I'm most excited about all weekend for our mental health summit. And I'm like, okay. And she was like, and the theme is female pleasure. And I was like, honestly, okay. Like, it's a little unconventional, but we're in the Bay Area, yay area. Like, whatever, let's do it. I'm into female pleasure. So Junebug starts talking to us, and she's like, we don't value the divine feminine. And I'm like, you know what, Junie, you're fucking right, we don't. And she's like, we're abusing Mother Earth and the matriarchs. And I'm like, fucking yeah, I honestly agree with what you're saying, you know? And she's like, let's remember it. Let's feel the breeze on our face. And I'm like, yes, I never take time to do this. Like, this is beautiful. And she's like, now I want all the women to stand and the men to sit and close their eyes. And I'm like, what in the Midsommar? Like, where did we take a turn? You know? And like, Why are we getting, why is the gender, uh-oh, what's going to happen? And so she's like, men, close your eyes. And they're like, yes, ma'am. And she's like, now, women, I want you to move and dance freely. Here's the thing. I love to dance. I love to freak a fucking little leak, you know? But like, not if you tell me to. The minute you're like, dance, I'm like, no. And if you say, feel free, I'm like, I don't feel free if you tell me to feel free, okay? Why are you telling me? And so people start dancing, right? And the women are like gyrating and undulating. And if I do feel free, when I dance, I'm like a gremlin who's like air fucking like a cock in the ground. You know, I'm like, yeah. And then if I don't feel free, as I did at this thing, I'm like a green bean, just like standing there. And so I'm just like, oh my God. And the women are dancing and then it ends. Thank God it ends. And she's like, okay, now. I'm like, no, that was then. No more now. She's like, I want the men to open their eyes and I want the women to dance freely in front of them. Unless any of the women don't feel comfortable with that, but you know, right? And so that's it, basically like oust yourself as a wet blanket. And a little extra bit, a little context and tidbit for you is this is the weekend after the Kavanaugh hearings. Yeah, totally. Feel you, babes. So we're all there with this very fresh recognition that like this country hates women, right? We're like, whoa, that's crazy. Like he sexually assaulted her. And then they were like the highest court in all the land. And women across the country were like, that checks out. How dark is that? Like it really happened. So we're all feeling really activated and I'm not wanting to be in front of the male gaze at all, right? And so she's like, unless anyone didn't want it, you don't have to if you don't want to. And then the whole thing wouldn't happen. And no one is going to do that, right? So the women start dancing and the men are watching. I'm green beaning it. It's hard. I'm a fucking pole. I'm just like, oh, fuck. And I'm so angry. I'm seething. And then she wraps it up and she's asking for feedback. And of course, this is how it is when there's a charismatic leader. Everybody wants to be like, that was the most amazing transformative, like, fucking suck it. And so the men are trying as best they can to, like, say anything other than sexualizing them. Thank you, men. They were allies that night. I was like, oh, I feel bad for you. But they were like, you were so empowered and vulnerable. And also, meanwhile, like, there's, like, a 67-year-old Berkeley professor who's watching his 20-year-old TAs. Like, it's fucking weird, you know? And so she's going around. She's getting feedback. And I feel it. I'm like, oh my God, why am I raising my hand? Like this is my vacation work weekend, weird hybrid, but whatever, you know? But I just can't help myself and the anger is growing. And I'm like, she's a kooky lady. You don't know if she's a cult leader. Like she's not exploiting us. It's fine. Like you didn't have to dance. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. And then she's like, yes, Michelle. And I'm like, hi. I actually found that it was like the feminine conditioning in me that made me not say I am 0% comfortable doing this the weekend after the Kavanaugh hearings. I do not want to dance in front of men at all. I felt so uncomfortable. The space wasn't set up safely in any way, shape, or form. And I didn't have the space to say that I don't want to fucking do this. And I'm really angry. And then I like take a breath. Because even though I know it was the right thing to say, I'm like back in Sunday school. And I'm like, no, Mr. Priest, like women should be priests too. And they're like, you're kicked out of Sunday school. And I'm back like telling this principal that kid didn't do that thing. And like, I'm back in all these spaces where I'm telling these adults who are wrong that they're wrong, but my body is holding it and I'm freaking out. So I say all that and I take the breath and like a couple beats go by and all the women around me one by one start saying, I felt that way too. And like, that was so bad. And literally, me too, the campaign slogan, right? And then the women around me start crying. And I'm like, oh boy, you know, like, shit, it's a revolution, man. And so like we're all falling apart. And Junebug, she's an expert, right? So she sees things happening and percolating and she takes the moment and she's like, and isn't that good that you're telling me right now instead of waiting for later? Didn't this workshop empower you? And I'm like, you're not the reason for my Irish Catholic bullshit. Like, you're not my mom. Like, I'm fucked up for different reasons. I would have yelled at you anyways, but I don't say all that because I'm still shaking, you know? And so we gather our mats and all these women start coming up to me and telling me their sexual assault stories. And so again, my job was suicide prevention. This was my bougie weekend away, I thought, but I guess not. And I'm like holding all these stories of women decompressing, right? And then I go back to the cabin and I talk to the two TAs who I'm sharing the cabin with. And they're like, that was really fucked up. Thank you for saying something. I'm like, yeah, for sure. Of course, super fucked up. And the rest of the weekend, Junebug is clocking me. I see her kind of just like keeping tabs on me every time I'm talking to someone, especially someone of influence, right? And on the last day, she approaches me. She's like, you have your finger on the pulse. Like, you're really aware of what's going on. I'd love to get your cell phone number. And I was like, totally, Junebug, because you say yes, and then you just avoid them because, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't want any trouble. So I don't get her number. And then we have a closing ceremony at the Mental Health Summit with all white people where we thank spirit. And I'm like, what the fuck? This is crazy. And then I get in the car with my coworker, Robbie, and with that guy, Joe. And we're like, this has been a pretty weird weekend, wouldn't you say? Like, craziest mental health summit I've ever been to. And Joe was like, yeah, my friend who leads this, I really like her, but I have a lot of feedback. I don't know what just happened to us. And I was like, yeah, me neither. And how does this place make money? Like, the gathering? And Robbie, my coworker, who had been like pretty unfazed and quiet the whole weekend, he was like, well, they make money because this is the headquarters for Cosmic Coming, the cult where you kind of have to like finger bang each other. And I know this because my sister fell prey to them. She left our family. She had to marry a guy within it. She fell financial ruin to all of it. And we haven't seen her since. And I was like, holy fuck, like what? And we're like, Robbie, that's pertinent information going into the cult weekend. Why are you telling us as we're driving out of the cult weekend? And I'm like, pedal to the metal, Joe. Like, we gotta fucking go. And so we're driving out of there and we're like, that was wacky. Oh my God. And Robbie, I don't trust you for a minute. You would definitely throw me under the bus. So I get back home to San Francisco, safe, non-culty San Francisco. And the following Monday, our CEO in an all staff meeting in front of 200 people is like, what were your findings from the mental health summit? And I was like, it was a cult, work cult. We worked at a cult. It was a work cult. And they're all like, what? And I was like, and a sex work cult too. And they're like, stop talking. We'll put you at the end of the agenda. And I'm like, this would happen to me. Like, that's fine. Whatever. It's all fine. And then many months go by and one of our executives schedules a work meeting with me. And I'm like, oh my God, what is this about? Like, I don't, am I going to get fired? What happened? And she's like, I just wanted to ask about that mental health summit cult weekend. And I was like, uh-huh, I'm familiar. And she was like, did you say the woman's name was Junebug? And I was like, I sure did. Yeah, hard to forget. And she was like, well, I just spent a weekend and $15,000 exploring a women's workshop. And I was like, for sure. And what'd you do? And she was like, I was a woman. And we danced, and I was like, yeah, that totally checks out. So I want to leave you guys with like some cult resonant information because we are in LA, but I do not want the crime syndicate to like ruin my life. I have no money. I can't be followed. So instead, I will just share with you. Oh, my God. It's already coming undone. I will just, I'm already so scared. I shouldn't have called them a crime syndicate. Whatever. Anyways, if you find yourself in the city and you're in a room and someone is telling you to dance and you do not want to dance, you can call me and I will fucking fight for you. I love you guys. Mwah. I have a will they or won't they relationship with cults. We're kind of courting each other. Cult weekend. A hotbed of cult. A hotbed of cult. The Venn diagram for me and cults, like, it's uncomfortably close.
Cult weekend. Close.
This is the headquarters for Cosmic Coming.
Cult weekend.
The cult where you kind of have to, like, finger bang each other.
A hotbed of cult. Cult weekend.
You don't need to be that girl. You don't
cult
need to
weekend.
Be a little Irish Catholic cunt who's like, fuck you, cult.
Oh, my.
Shit, this is a cold. Oh my God. Okay, we gotta go.
We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Willa Paskin, the host of Decoder Ring, Slate's podcast about cracking cultural mysteries. On Decoder Ring, we dive down rabbit holes and obsessively explore questions hiding in plain sight. Like, why has slow dancing gone out of style? And when did we all become obsessed with hydration? And where did the word mullet, you know, to describe a hairstyle, come from? That's Decoder Ring, named one of the best podcasts of 2023 by the New York Times. Listen to new episodes every 2 weeks and make sure to follow us so you never miss one.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back.
This is Risk. This is the music from the movie Dial M for Murder by Alfred Hitchcock, who made a bunch of other movies that were better. We just heard from Michelle Murphy, who you can find at michellemurphytalks.com. And if you ever found yourself wondering if you were in a cult, tell us about it. Pitch us your story about Rama or Ramtha or Ram Dass by visiting the submissions page at risk-show.com. Ram Dass, we like, actually. And you know what else we like? When you, the listeners, create interstitials for us. Do you like to play around with audio editing? Well, we have an episode with stories coming up about graffiti, pants peeing, and atheism. If you want to edit together a fun little sound collage lasting 60 seconds or less on the topic of graffiti, or pants peeing, or atheism, get it to me. Email me at kevin@risk-show.com. Next up, we're going to hear from Michael Marceline. So here he is now. The story we call Inner Earthquakes.
Okay. When I need to be somewhere, I like to be there early. It helps me to transition and prepare for what's to come. And so I find myself waiting at my desk in my own apartment 30 minutes early for the virtual psych appointment that's going to change my life and challenge everything I think I know. It's 2021, June, and 15 months of COVID isolation have reduced my ability to tolerate being in the public. And the meltdowns that I've had my whole life have been getting worse, coming more often and more easily. I'm screaming at cars on the street when they scare me or break a rule. I'm practically agoraphobic in my avoidance of the public sphere. I'm scared I'll go out and the sounds will be too loud, the lights will be too bright, a person will crowd me or do the wrong thing and I will lose it, scream at somebody, at best embarrass myself, but also I could hurt myself or somebody else, and what if the cops are called? We all know how well American police deal with people in crisis or anyone in general. So, my husband's worried about me. I'm worried about myself. At 41, this is the first time in my adult life that I've gotten a psychological evaluation. As an adolescent, I got testing and treatment, but my father refused to let me hear directly from my doctor, and I couldn't trust what he told me. The diagnosis he told me, oppositional defiant disorder, just so happened to be the same diagnosis he had decided for me after taking a community college psych course. And anyways, it didn't go anywhere because he didn't know how to deal with it, and neither did I. And on top of that, he just used it as validation to mistreat me the way he always had. So it feels actually great. I'm relieved and even elated to finally get some answers I can trust directly from a professional. And also, I feel so safe in this process in a way that I didn't before, and in control. As part of it, the doctor asked me to go back and excavate my past, really especially investigate my childhood years. From a very young age, I struggled to get along with other kids, to fit in. I am extremely sensitive to certain sensory inputs in a disabling way. Worst of all, I have these meltdowns. It's like I walk around with dynamite packed inside of me, and certain triggers just light off the fuse. The noxious stench of burnt eggs, the humiliation of social rejection, a disruption in my routine, any of these things can cause an explosion. Suddenly, I'm filled with writhing lava snakes trying to get out of sight of me. I'm screaming, I'm stomping, I'm flailing my body and throwing myself around. I hurl insults, I throw things. Sometimes I hurt myself or accidentally hit somebody nearby. Afterwards, I'm left in ashes, emotionally and physically, laden with shame and guilt because the adults around me, they don't believe me that I'm struggling. They blame me. I'm called a brat. I'm called spoiled. To her credit, my mother does try to accommodate me somewhat. The sound of our shower, to me, may as well be the worst hailstorm ever known to man. So she lets me take a bath instead. The electric clippers at the barbershop, to me, it's like a chainsaw. So she insists that the barber uses scissors instead. When I'm 5, one day, my father announces he's taking me to the barber. I know what this means, and I'm terrified. The explosion goes off, but no amount of pleading, begging, weeping will change his mind. Soon I'm in the car, weeping to myself quietly as he screams at me. You're going to go in there. You're going to do what you're told. You're not going to embarrass me. And if you do, if you mess up, you're going to get the belt when you get home. I'm not going to raise no sissy. I'm overwhelmed the moment the bells clang on the opening door. The wall of mirrors amplifies the glaring light and the crowd of bodies. I'm flooded by the sounds, the scraping of the broom, snipping of the scissors, the buzzing of the clippers, and the droning of the men talking, I don't know, about sports or something. I walk to the chair like it's electrified, and I sit frozen in fear as he uses the clippers on me. I suppress the fire inside me, clamp down the tears. I know that if I mess up, I'm going to get it one way or the other, and I'd rather not lose an ear. And left feeling so ashamed of myself. What is wrong with me? As I grow, I realize that if I focus on one sensation, I can kind of block out unwanted sensory inputs. And I start doing things like chewing my nails or picking my scabs, plucking my hairs. When I'm 8, I get myself into trouble. I'm in second grade, and I would rather be anywhere but this classroom. It's the first year without my mother. In September, she handed us to our father, and we haven't heard from her or seen her except for some Christmas gifts since. So here I am, wanting to be anywhere else, struggling to like myself, to be present. I don't remember the name of that teacher. She's the only teacher. I don't remember her name. And I don't remember any of my peers. They may have all been faceless people, you know? I start sticking my pencil eraser end into my ear, and it feels good. Like, looking back, it kind of felt like the moments before orgasm. So I kept doing it, you know? This is a great way to, like, focus and shut out the world around me. And I just keep going and keep going. I think the teacher may have even asked me to stop, and I ignored her. I pull out the pencil one last time, and the eraser doesn't come out with it. Dad is pissed, screams at me on the way to the doctor's. How could I do this? The doctor is angry, scolds me. The 6-inch, maybe more, set of tweezers they're going to use to pull it out of my ear petrifies me. The dynamite goes off. That doesn't deter them. They pin me down to the table and yank it out as I'm screaming. Why am I like this? What is wrong with me? So I struggle through school, through my teenage years. When I hit my junior year of high school, something happens that is pretty good. I join our school's first Reader's Theater Club. And I blossom. I learn the joy of collaboration, of being in a group. I start to understand how to create a persona, to take turns in conversations, to script and to plan ahead. But most of all, I gain a ton of confidence because people like me in this context, and I'm really good at it. I get praised, and I'm not only learning the 3 parts I'm doing in Alice in Wonderland, but I'm learning everybody's parts. So I go on to study theater in college and end up moving to New York in my 20s to pursue the dream of living as a dramatist. But it's not a great place for me. I'm constantly in sensory overload from the cacophony of sensory inputs. It's relentless. The social scene is intimidating, and I'm once again struggling to be myself and to make friends. Spend a lot of time lonely and depressed on the edge of meltdowns. In 2012, at the age of 32, I have my worst meltdown ever, one that I truly regret. At the end of one of my shifts, I get the craving for some company. I'm itching for some dick, you know? Even though I'm exhausted, probably work 50 hours a week, I hop on my bike and I head down to the infamous gay bar, The Cock. I remember, of course, the smells, the cheap booze, the bleach / cum, the sweat, and the crowded bodies. I'm not super comfortable in these places, and I usually leave alone. I'm scared to approach anybody because rejection has never gotten any easier for me throughout my entire life. But tonight, I'm lucky. I end up connecting with this really good-looking guy in his 20s, caramel skin, soulful eyes. We're talking. I mean, we're using our mouths, but we're not using words. Eventually, he invites me back to his place across the street on 2nd Avenue. We end up in his bed, shirtless, continuing to talk our language of limbs and lips. About 20 minutes in, he stops suddenly. He says, "You need to go home." I'm confused. "What?" "I need you to leave." "Why?" "Just go." The dynamite goes off. I fly out of the bed. I fling myself around the room, shoving my shirt on, grabbing my things and screaming at him. "Why did you bring me here? What do you want from me? What the fuck is wrong with you?" I pause as I see the look of fear in his eyes. He's sitting on his bed, hugging his knees to his chest. Oh, fuck. I slam the door and stomp down the stairs. On the train, the adrenaline fades, and I start to realize what I've done. How could I do that? What the fuck? I'm out of control. I terrified somebody in their own home? It's just really deep shame and regret. I've come back to the present as the doctor joins the video chat. She explains that the testing she gave me showed extreme rigidity of thought. That combined with my sensory sensitivities and my social communication issues mean that I'm autistic. Autistic? What? How can I be autistic? Autistic people are shut down, cold, don't like people. They like math and engineering. If they do talk, they talk with great difficulty. I'm emotional. I'm passionate, creative. I don't like math. And when I talk, I can talk like a river. It doesn't make any sense. But through the process of acceptance, I start to realize that my view, my concept of what autism is, has been warped and limited by the cultural representations I've experienced. You know, we only ever see the same flavor of autistic person, from Tommy to Rayman to Sheldon. And the fact is, there are as many different flavors of autistic people as there are different people. The saying in the community is, if you've met an autistic person, you've met one autistic person. It's kind of the beauty of like the metaphor of the spectrum, right? Which people, I think, will sometimes confuse with the continuum, where one thing on one end, less of the other of the thing on the other end. But there's no end to the spectrum. It's circular. All color is light, whether it's pink, blue, yellow, green, it's all light. And in the same way, autistic people, no matter how we look or sound or act, we're all struggling with sensory processing and social communication at the core. Having this information, of course, is monumental. It's completely changed my view of myself for the better. Previously, it was kind of like looking at myself in telephoto, like in the close-up, without any of the context. And now I feel like I look at the full picture. I know my limits now, and I was able to make changes to reduce my meltdowns, to feel better. Like, I have to make sacrifices, for sure. I can't have a social life on weeknights and work at the same time. You know, I have to stick to a routine. But it's worth it. It's totally worth it. Most of all, I can really accept myself now. I know that, in truth, there's nothing wrong with me. I am perfectly normal for the person that I am.
My analyst told me that I was right out of my head. He said I'd need treatment, but I'm not that easily led. He said I was the type that was most inclined when out of his sight to be out of my mind. And he thought I was nuts, no more ifs, or ands, or buts. They say as a child I appeared a little bit wild with all my crazy ideas, but I knew what was happening, I knew I was a genius. What's so strange when you know that you're a wizard at three? I knew that this was meant to be.
This is Risk. This is Joni Itchel behind me now. And we just heard from Michael Marceline. Michael is the winner of the Dennis Johnston Playwriting Prize from Smith College for his play Cowboys. You can find him at u/TheEmpressIsIn on Reddit, and you might also want to look up ASAN, the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network. They're at autisticadvocacy.org. And speaking of Reddit, you can go right over to r/RiskPodcast and share your thoughts on Michael's story or Michelle Murphy's or any story, really. Be a part of our community on Reddit or on our Facebook group or wherever else you haunt the internet. Okay, we're just about done here, but check your feed on Thursday when we will be resharing
a classic Risk episode called Square Pegs, with stories from Aaron Wolf, Larry Rosen, Dana Rossi, and Cooper Barnes. But that's Thursday, whereas, folks, today's the day. Take a risk.
Once there was this kid who dug a pencil in his ear when he was in school, but when the teacher told him, "Stop that," a piece broke off and it fell in. They had to hold him down when they pulled it out of his. Let the dummies take it from here.
But both girl and boy were glad. This one kid had it worse than that. Cause then there was this boy whose parents made him come directly home right after school. And when they went to their church, they shook and lurched all over the church floor. He couldn't quite explain it, they'd always just gone
one night. My parents got frantic, didn't know what to do. But I saw some crazy scenes before I came to. Now, do you think I was crazy? I may have been only three, but I was swaying. They all looked at A. Graham Bell. They all looked at Edison and also at Einstein. So why should I feel sorry if they just couldn't understand the reasoning and the logic that went on in my head? I had a brain, it was insane, though, to let them laugh at me when I refused to ride on all the double-decker buses, all because there was no driver on the top.
No driver on the top. This chick is twisted. What's the matter with her?
My analyst told me that I was right out of my head, the way he described it. He said I'd be better dead than alive. I didn't listen to his jive. I knew all along he was all wrong, and I knew that he thought I was crazy, but I'm not. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
My analyst told me that I was right out of my head, but I said, dear doctor, I think that it's you instead, cause I have got a thing that's unique and new. It proves that I'll have the last laugh on you, cause instead of one head, I got two. And you know, two heads are better than one.